amplifier votre passion pour la guitare pour quelques euros par mois. Rendez-vous sur lachaineguitare.com. Amplify your passion for the guitar for a few dollars per month. Head over to theguitarchannel.biz. Welcome to the Guitar Channel. I am super happy to welcome you a new interview. I have on the other side of the Skype connection, live from Germany, Erlend Krause. Erlend, how are you doing on this beautiful Monday morning?
Yes, I'm very, very happy. I'm very fine. Thank you. The sun is shining in Berlin.
Okay, excellent.
I just had an hour of practicing the guitar, so.
Okay, good.
I'm full of good vibes.
Excellent. So I discovered you through a Kemper video we are going to talk about, where you play a beautiful composition of yours. But before we talk about that, tell me, what was your very first guitar?
Oh, I was in Romania at that time. I was around about 11, I think. And my grandpa bought me a guitar. I don't even remember the name. It's a Romanian brand, something very unplayable.
Okay.
In fact, it had the strings were too high, and I was a violin player. I had to play the violin age 5. My father insisted, and all my technique on the guitar is based on the violin. Also, how I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think with the bow in the right hand. I always have a bow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's why my notes sing always. So when I touched first time this guitar, because I had Jimi Hendrix playing Voodoo Child, and mm-hmm. I thought, okay, forget the violin.
Okay.
This is what I want. And but it was hard to play that instrument at first. And then later on, I had a Stratocaster of mm-hmm. the Phoenix guy. My big hero was a guitar player from a band called Phoenix, which in Romania was very, very famous, like the Rolling Stones here.
Mm-hmm.
So he let me play on his Stratocaster. It was a 69 Strat.
Nice.
And that Strat was playable.
Okay.
So my first try with that guitar, it had about 1 centimeter strings up above the fret
mm-hmm.
board.
And yeah.
I didn't know if it's right or wrong, because nobody taught me.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a strange situation. I could not really get this strings down.
Yeah, I suppose.
And then later on, I was, I think, 12. Then I played on a real Strat, and I knew how it should feel.
Mm-hmm. So how long did you play the violin before you switched to guitar?
Well, I play violin. I played from age 5.
Mm-hmm.
I started, you know, because that's the age to start the violin. If you want to end up as a classical soloist, you
mm-hmm.
have to start very early that instrument, especially because it trains your ears to micro tuning
mm-hmm.
and so on. So it's not so recommended to start at age 10 or 11. That's, they say, I mean, this is the classical teaching. They
mm-hmm.
say it's too late.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So I was actually punished to that instrument, I must say, because it's no fun to
mm-hmm.
learn the violin.
Mm-hmm.
It's, I don't know if you know about that, but it's no fun at all.
Mm-hmm.
You
mm-hmm.
have to practice while your colleagues, your friends are playing soccer outside. Doesn't matter if the weather is sunny or if it's raining, you have to be inside and play that instrument. And until you sort of manage it, it takes you 5 years at least to get a note
mm-hmm.
which you like to hear.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
The rest is just punishment.
Mm-hmm.
You try to manage that instrument, and it's so hard to play, you know. Mm.
And but you also and you also punish the people listening to you, right?
Right. That was not so much a problem in Romania, because we were at the countryside, and
Okay.
it was I was on my own almost all the time anyway, so that was not a problem. But you know, the problem is if your soul, if your heart is developed very early, and you cannot make this bridge to a beautiful, to beauty, because violin is ugly if you don't play it beautiful. And until then, you need so much time, and you have to love that instrument. And nobody was able to teach me that. You know, the teachers in that time in Romania, actually it was my father the first 5 years. But also afterwards, when I already kind of got something out of that instrument, nobody was able to make a bridge between, you know, if you do that, you're going to reach that point that this instrument will give you fulfillment and will fulfill your heart with good vibes. I did not come to that point. Even I played the violin till age 19, so I finished my career of that instrument with the Mendelssohn concerto in G minor. I did it, but I hated it because it never was really what I wanted. On the guitar, afterwards, I was able to express my heart. You know, that's a big difference. If you play an instrument just because somebody says you have to do that, and then you end up in an orchestra or however with the violin, I also tried to rock it, you know. I also tried to, I played it on a Marshall amp and distorted and all that, but it did not give me response to my heart, to what I think an instrument should be, because an instrument is like the closest you can have in your life. You spend so many hours with that instrument, and of course there must be a moment which you resonate with it, which you become it. You become that tone you play or that note you play. You know what I mean? And that was a kind of a gift to me, to be able to play that instrument, the guitar, and to end up age 62 I'm now, that I really love what I hear when I play.
And what was your training as a guitar player? Did you have some teacher, or are you completely self-taught?
Actually, yes. I had a few lessons with that guy I mentioned, the Phoenix, my hero. But he noticed my left hand was trained, you know, from the violin. I mean, you have an amazing technique on the left hand. I just needed to understand some chords where, because violin is mostly monophonic. You play out at most two strings at one time, and here there were chords, and he explained to me how to, he taught me some chords, that was all. The rest, since then, I actually developed my kind of expressing. It's more an expression than playing, I think. Myself.
What do you think was is the impact of your violin teaching, what you learned on violin, to your technique on guitar? You just talked about you used to use a bow, obviously. So can you give us an example of the impact of the violin technique into your guitar technique?
You can hear it in my solos. It's actually like I sing with the guitar, like I sing a male or a female voice. It's more like singing that playing scales or that kind of, you know. I never gave attention to any scales or to play technically fast or this. The only attention I had, I wanted the guitar to sound like a singer of a band. You know, if I hear a solo guitar, I want it to be very strong and prominent, talking to me. And that's what I miss mainly in the guitar world. Mm-hmm. You know, they play very, whatever style you see, if it's fusion or jazz or whatever, there's very few people who play, who express something, mm-hmm. who tell me a story on their instrument. And that's what I tried all the time. I tried to be a story when I play. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise it doesn't make sense for me.
Yeah.
And this, what I mentioned with the bow coming from the violin, I never I never agreed to a note which finishes. You know, guitar is very, if you don't reach this kind of singing sound, it is a very short peak, mm-hmm. and then it goes away, the tone.
Yeah.
So I always try to find a way to make long notes which I can, while they ring, while they sing, I can form them with the right and the left hand. That is, but that you have to have that in your head. You have to hear that before you play, so that it happens then. And that was, I spent a lot of time finding out how can I do that. You know, because in Romania we didn't have, I was not able to create a sound like Hendrix. I didn't have the gear for that. I didn't have a pedal. I didn't have a wah-wah. I didn't have anything. So the only thing that Phoenix guy had was Marshall stacks.
Okay.
You must imagine the old Marshall stacks from the 70s. Mm-hmm. No gain. So
no master volume. Yeah.
to have a singing sound, I had to blow that place away. It was a very little place, and you had to put all these knobs on the Marshall to the right, no exceptions, until your head just blew away.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had this sound, but not fulfilled as I heard it.
Mm-hmm.
It was on the way to there.
Mm-hmm.
And years later, that was, I think I played in that state for about 7 years. With 19, I flew Romania then to the West. And when I arrived here, I had my first amp with a gain.
Okay.
So then I thought, oh, this is the way, you know?
Okay.
So it was really, it was a long wait until I was able to first time hear something I always imagined,
And
how it should be.
Yeah, and what about the fact that guitar can be a very imperfect instrument regarding intonation compared to what you can do on a violin where there is no fret and you can really put your finger right where it should be? So I suppose you develop your hearing to have a very precise. So was that difficult for you to switch to guitar, which can be sometimes sound really weird or not so good, if not so in tune, if you see what I mean?
Yeah, well, intonation is more difficult on a violin, you know, because if you have a guitar and you spend some time in adjusting the octave and so, but you have to understand physics a little bit in that way, you know. You cannot, there is no perfect tuning on a violin, and there is no perfect tuning on a guitar.
Mm-hmm.
So what is important is that your ear knows how the note, where the note should be. And if you pull a lot like me and work a lot with the tremolo, then you correct the micro pitch, micro tuning with the ear in real time. And that is for me the main difference between guitar players. Some they don't even know about this. They just play and think this is how it should be, because they don't know the little difference. On a violin, for instance, you correct in every moment your tone. And the first shock is, you know, because you learn it mostly a few years on your own. And first time you get a shock is when you play with a piano player in the classical business. Because the piano is called tempered tuning, which is wrong all the time, you know, because you have three strings for every note, or two or three, depending on the extremes, you have two.
Yeah.
And the three, they make a kind of a chorus. You know, my father explained that to me because he was a piano tuner. You tune one of these three strings. Let's say you have an A 440. You tune right. The other one is slightly up. The third one is slightly down. And they put the octaves together, you know, because we don't have the ability in seven octaves to have clean octaves in physics. In physics, the octave is reducing. And the same is on the guitar. If you play a note to some playback, to a keyboard, keyboards are detuned badly sometimes. You know, if they sound great, they are very detuned. Then you have to have that ear to correct that after that instrument, because otherwise it sounds terrible. And you develop, I think, the best instrument to develop that ear is the violin, which is you have to be punished to that. It's terrible. It's a real difficult situation, you know. And I think it is possible to get to that point if you have a teacher who loves to explain that to you. But we didn't have that kind of teachers, you know. They were just the kind of Eastern blockheads, you know. They were punished, so they punished their people, their pupils, and so on, you know. They didn't reflect anything. They could have done, but in that country, I think punishment was the main rule. You have to, you know, so you have to get conform with everything. And I had the big luck to free myself from that shit through Jimmy, because Jimmy was for me the absolute synonym for freedom.
Definitely,
how he played, I not only heart and soul and all that, but freedom. You know, when I heard this guy, I thought this is freedom in music.
What are the other influences you could mention in your playing, you had in your playing?
Well, I had many heroes.
Yeah.
You know, when I was kind of 14, I heard Cream, Cream Live, that famous face of Cream, you know, live at, there's one live double album. Then I heard very, very, very much Led Zeppelin. I was a big fan of Jimmy Page that time, you know. His solos were, I loved them because he builds up a little bit the solos. It's not so just rhythm and blues or bluesy. It's a bit more, he gets you somewhere. And later on Jeff Beck, of course, because he was the latest of those guys who influenced until now the guitar tone. I mean, not his wild stuff, more the ballads.
Where
guitar sings very beautifully. Yeah, and that's it, more or less. Brian May influenced me. I had a phase where I loved Queen, very much in the beginning, Bohemian Rhapsody and that album. Mm-hmm. I think he's a very inventive guitar player too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe I forgot someone.
Okay, that's
more or less the guys I listen to.
Okay, great. So as I said at the beginning of the interview, I discovered you through a composition called The Stand that was produced, I suppose, by the Kemper people. So tell us the story about the video people can find on YouTube.
Well, I did for Kemper, I think, 5 videos now. It started with two. It started actually with a piece called Triple O, which is on my last album, but it was an improvisation then, 7 years ago. And that was the first time I played the Profiler, I think. And then we did some Aguilera stuff where I played beautiful singing of this. I think she's a very, very good singer. And that took me to tapping. I never did this technique I play now before the Hurt video.
Okay.
Hurt was 2008. Hurt is called a song from Aguilera. Mm-hmm. Then came The Voice Within. And both those solos, you have to know, were asked from me by James Last.
Okay.
So I owe him the fact that I reached to this technique, because before Hurt, I played also very singing, but with a pick in the right hand.
Okay.
So that moment was crucial in my career, because I was not able to make an Aguilera song sound as I thought it should sound. Mm-hmm. And I spent quite a while to think why. And then I discovered this possibility to play some notes in different spots of the guitar to make them sound interesting. And bendings, which I learned from her, because she bends. Normally, guitar players bend from down to up with the finger and play a half note. Or like one I forgot, David Gilmour plays a third. Above, or a small third or a big third. So Aguilera comes from up when she makes bendings, and it's not possible. Mm-hmm. You have to reinvent physics. So the finger has already to be there to take it down and then to bring it back. So you reach the same note.
Okay, I see what you mean. It's a reverse bend. You start up, you go down, and up again, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So she's making all the bendings. This is the speciality of her. She comes from above and ends under the note and then goes to the note. Mm-hmm. And this is on the guitar. I never played it, so I spent some time on that building that technique. But it's also little things which she makes, you know, not half tones, less than that. Mm-hmm. It's just little modulations around the note she wants to reach, which I make with the right hand, with the tremolo, which is always in my right hand. So I can adjust little things. And that's making it interesting. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you don't even hear that it's a different tone to the tone that you think you hear, but it makes the tone richer in harmonics. And that's what's about, because guitar is, from sound-wise, it's very boring. You know, if you cut the impact in the middle and you don't do anything to it, it sounds like a sinus tone. You must try that. If you cut your beginnings, you know, I don't know the English word.
The attack,
the harmonic, the specific sound of a guitar. If you cut that away, you just hear a beep. It's like a nothing. Mm-hmm. So, okay. The stand is the latest one. We wanted to, or camper people said, you showed so much to the people through your videos. Now we want something that shows morphing in a way that was never there.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, okay, it's not so my business morphing, because I just have one sound and love it. If I find a sound, that's my sound.
And, mm-hmm. and you stick with it, yes. Mm-hmm.
Then I just try to express myself with that sound, mm-hmm. and me to be the you know, to see what else is possible on that with that sound, but not always change sounds. Like many people think, if they have 2,000 profiles, they have possibilities. Mm-hmm. That's the opposite.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. you lose yourself in finding sound, and nobody's gonna help you play.
Mm-hmm.
You have to play. So in the stand, it was also, you know, I'm fed up with this Corona shit.
And I tried are to you express, really
to express something which I see now in my neighborhood, in my friendship, in the world, these two absolute insane enemies, you know, the ones that think this is all crap,
mm-hmm.
and the ones that believe in this crap, you know.
Yeah.
And because they wanted so morphings that go from really from a very soft to a very different point, I thought I'm going to use that possibility. And then I had the luck that Thomas, the guy that is, I think he is the marketing man for Kemper, he's a friend, and he came by, and while I played, he programmed, for instance, this intro where I play kind of a little bit like a bass, how's his name, the Peter Gabriel guy, the Tony Levin.
Tony Levin, yeah, the bass player.
Said,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. He said, do something like Tony Levin.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, yeah, the program something like that, sounds like that. And he screwed that knobs. I don't know what, I don't even know what he did. Because I come from a chord, which is a clean chord with some delays.
Yeah.
And while I press that pedal down, I end up with a kind of octave, whatever. And that inspired me to that sort of playing, you know, because
nice.
It's always an interaction. When I hear something, I know what I could do with that. But I would never, me myself, I would never got there. That was inspired by the guy, Thomas Wendt is his name, you know. He just turned knobs and said, yeah, go back, go, you know, that, for that part.
Mm-hmm. So the tones were the first inspiration. Then out of the tone, you wrote the piece, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
But not the whole piece. Mm-hmm. I had the part which comes as a third part in the stand, that arpeggios,
mm-hmm.
which I make this filter. He said he would like something, me to do a filter movement like in a mini Moog.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you play some scale and you with the one hand opens up the filter,
mm-hmm.
which you heard 1,000 times, but on a guitar not so often.
Mm-hmm.
So that part was already. That part I practice for now about, I think, 4 years.
Yeah. Okay.
Has to be. That is a very tricky part to play.
Mm-hmm.
So the song is actually based on that part. That's the third part where I play this arpeggios on and on different chords, mm-hmm. on different chords.
Different position on the neck, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the part before, the second part, is also developed harmonically from the third part. So that was the nucleus of this the stand.
Mm-hmm.
The start and the ending, where I play this Tony Levin stuff, is from that taken to make it, I wanted something, something negative-ish.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted mm-hmm. something shocking, because that what I talk about outside there, I cannot imagine how people can be so so poor in thinking
mm-hmm.
and in self esteem and self respect
mm-hmm.
to go with that. That was kind of my intention to bring two words which are so opposite together in one piece.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So the full video was recorded in one take, right?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. That's very impressive, because it sounds great. I guess you had some background music to play over it, right?
I can explain to you.
Yeah, please.
I had a playback.
Yeah.
I always play on a playback. I don't like to play on my own so mm-hmm. much. And what you don't hear, I have in my in-ears.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I have a click track, a click.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew when chords come and when the parts come, of course, it was all counted.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
but I was lucky. I was lucky with that one take.
Okay,
I had a good moment, you know, because normally you must make one or two drops because mm-hmm. the intensity, the piece is four minutes long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it always can happen if you really play. I think it's not so important how many drops a video has,
mm-hmm.
you know, because that's not, if you play live, you cannot drop. So if you make a little mistake or so, nobody would hear that.
Mm-hmm.
But on a video like that, which people listen on and on, I think it's no drama if you make a cut somewhere,
mm-hmm.
because you're not always able to give so much input on every part. You know, you have to a little bit to hold back a little bit. If you know, because the third part is the worst to play.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's the hardest to play. So you won't start with 100%. You just build up a little bit. But that's not my kind of playing. I always want to every note to sit. And I had a powerful moment. I went in, I built up. We started. Normally we do three takes or four takes and take maybe a third part from the second take.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But this one was one take and I knew it.
Mm-hmm.
You feel that.
Yeah.
You know? You
mm-hmm.
feel it. That was it.
Mm-hmm.
And we have the video also, you know. Thomas cutted it like this because he wanted to show the movements of the knob and mm-hmm. all that. But we have the camera.
Mm-hmm. The proof that it is actually one take.
We're
going
to post that if people are interested.
Yeah.
It's no cut.
Mm-hmm.
It's nothing. Always, we have two cameras. One is a bit behind,
mm-hmm.
and one is on me on mm-hmm. the fingers. So mm-hmm. it's no
trick. Doubt, yeah,
no trick. No. It's a strong piece.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is, and the result is really great. And I was watching it over and over right before we started the interview, because it's really a fascinating piece of music. So congratulations for that. Are you using the Kemper all the time, or is that mainly a studio tool for you, or is that really the way to get your guitar sound?
Well, I use since I have the camper, which is 2007 years ago. I don't know exactly when I met this guy. But also before the camper, I was using only laptop main stage plugins.
Okay.
So I played the whole tours with James Last since some spot completely without a box on stage. No boxes. I had on the 92 on the first tour, I had an enormous gear stuff there. And I thought, this is not the way.
Okay.
Because if you play so many styles of music, you have to somehow decide. Otherwise, you build a wall. You have to have all the amps existing and all the cabinets. So I was very early fascinated by just playing programmed plugins because there were no Camper at that time. So
okay.
I used Amplitube, I used GTR from Waves and many others available. And since I have the Camper, of course, I use only the Camper because it's the best sounding. It's,
okay.
it's for me, it's like a plugin, but a better sounding plugin. You know, it has more. I cannot even explain it. It's a dimension they don't have. It's a little bit something. It's not much, but it's only in the Camper. I cannot tell you. And I use actually almost just for my lead sound one sound, which is that Tube Thomson amp, in different gain situations. I just change a little bit gain. Sometimes I EQ it, but I don't like to EQ the guitar. So it's almost that sound in different gain. But when I play other stuff, background guitars, which are very important too, I use, of course, other Camper sounds.
Okay.
I have one, I don't know his name, Tim Pierce, it's,
oh,
I
yeah.
think it's his name. He has a lot of good profiles.
That,
he has one list of profiles. You know, I did not do one profile in my whole life. I'm too lazy. And sometimes, you know, I have a friend, he insisted, it's a funny story, he insisted me to, I have an old Red Marshall.
Okay.
A very, lots of guitar players use that. It's a Super Bass 100. And it has the biggest trafo, the biggest, I don't know the English
transformer,
word.
Transformer, so output transformer, yeah.
Ever built by Marshall.
Okay.
So all the guitar players who have that stomp, a lot of stomps, they love this because it has an enormous power. And I have it by accident. I didn't even know what the value is. I just have it. And a Red Marshall box. And that friend of mine wanted me to play something for him that sounds exactly like Gary Moore.
Okay.
So I said, okay, I'm going to take my old Les Paul, and we tried to make that sound. And it ended up, he hired a GCM 800 top.
Yeah.
I said, I don't want to even spend time with that. But if you want, go and hire one, I play it. And it ended up, this Super 100 bass, I modified it. Somebody years ago said it's a possibility to directly go to the end, how you say that, to the power.
To the power amp section, yeah.
So you can make an input, and then you don't use the amp, only the...
the power section, only the power section and not the preamp section, okay?
Exactly. The only knob which is not separated is the presence knob
Okay,
that is connected to the
the power section.
And it ended up, of course, I knew it before. Camper mono out into that thing. It sounded 100 times better or singing than a GCM on its own.
Okay.
And so he wanted to have the cabinet to make five microphones here and there and whatever. So I did him a favor, but at the end it was the Kemper with my sound.
Okay.
Believe it or not. So this tool, this Kemper has something, I don't know, it's a magic something, 10% more than any plugin I tested.
And
that's all I can say.
And you never feel the need to take your guitar and plug into an amplifier straight? You're very happy with the Kemper?
You know, I have a different philosophy. I had I played in a band, Lake. It's was kind of famous in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And when I played with Lake, I had a Music Man amp, 100 watts Music Man.
Yeah.
And as a preamp, I had a Roland Cube 60.
Okay. Okay.
I don't ask me how I came to this
strange combination. Yes. Yeah.
but I had a very, very nice sound on the Les Paul,
mm-hmm.
using that preamp somehow in a sort of, you know. And I made a very strange experience. I played this Lake album in a studio in Hamburg with a very good sound engineer. And then I had some other, I was called as a session guitar player in another studio. And I had exactly the same situation, my Les Paul and these two things, and it sounded totally different. And I didn't know why, because I'm not so experienced at that time. I did not know, I didn't realize how could it be that in this studio it sounds like shit, and I just finished that album and there's really a lot of solos of mine on that Lake album. It's called Hot Day, which I still love these days, the sound and how I played, because I spend a lot of time with that engineer in miking and, you know. And so that was a crucial moment for me, because I realized that not only the gear is important, but the room in which you record,
yeah.
and the microphones and all that is a wisdom for itself.
Yeah.
And it was a decision more, I wanted to play every night my best.
Mm-hmm.
And on the first tour, which I did with James Last, we did an England tour, 6 weeks. We played every day between nice theaters, 2,000 or 3,000 people, to big venues like 8,000 Birmingham kind of conference center and those big halls, you know. And every night I had a different sound on stage. You know, and with a different sound, you don't play well every night.
You have to adjust.
Sometimes you hear yourself, sometimes you don't hear anything. You just play like a robot. And I hate that. And I looked since ever, I talked, 92 was that situation, first tour. And then some sound engineer, which made, I think he was our... monitor mixer, he came with this idea, how would it be if you try in-ears, because in-ears were not at that time. They came a little bit later, I think 94 was that next tour. And since I heard these in-ears, I felt, okay, now I start to play the guitar on stage. Because, you know, the 1 meter to 2 meters from the box, that is no result. You have no chance. You have a drummer which is, today he's loud, tomorrow he's not so on it, and mm-hmm. then he's half the power. You have a brass section which blows your ears away if they want to play. If they're not so, you know, they play half the, and I'm very sensitive. If I have my sound and it's close to my ears, I can really be on a high level.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized this with every step. I've moved from cabinets to just those plugins. They didn't sound 100% as I wanted,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
but my playing got 500% better because everything was close to my ears. There were no excuse. Today I hear myself, tomorrow no. And then I also realized, timing wise, I introduced the click track in that big orchestra. Mm-hmm. You must imagine 40 people on stage, and they hated me for that.
Okay.
Every single player hated me. I said, hey, I don't program time delays to a BPM, which the old band leader, he is dead now, 2050, but he works on that BPMs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it can't be, I come on stage and the song was recorded 90 BPM and he has a bit too many gin tonics, and who is going to give us the right tempo? Because there is only one tempo for a song.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot play it every night as you wish.
Mm-hmm.
It has that tempo. Otherwise, you don't have to spend any time to find the ideal tempo for a song, you know? And that was also something I realized, the people don't want to play on a click track because they're not able to,
mm-hmm,
because
mm-hmm.
it's much harder.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know? And of course, then it starts also the ability. Do you have the ability to be the chief, to be the boss
mm-hmm.
of a click track?
Mm-hmm.
Because you can push everything if you are constantly, for instance, a little bit before the beat, but constantly,
mm-hmm.
not occasionally.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or you go behind the beat
mm-hmm.
and play the whole song laid back. And all those guys were not able, you know, and everyone had, imagine 40 people having 40 kinds of excuses. The one says he doesn't hear himself, or he doesn't hear the click, or he doesn't hear whatever, you know, it's, and I hate excuses, you know, music is so beautiful, you have to play together. So how can we play together, 40 people, you know? And they were very good musicians.
Mm.
I mean, I talk about our trumpeter, my beloved friend Chuck Findlay. He's one of the best trumpeters of the world, you know?
Mm.
They're not idiots, but I had to say, listen, this is music. This is not, we don't make a fun, it's not a circus,
mm-hmm.
it's music.
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized also, it's not only tunings, 40 different tunings on stage, because all the brass is mainly very low tuned, and you have to tell them, hey guys, can you a little bit go to that note?
Mm-hmm.
Because you're always low, flat.
Yeah.
And others, the whole strings are sharp because they come from the orchestra, and the orchestra is 4-4-3 now. Hertz, the A, is they push it up and up and up. And you have to organize this different words, because otherwise you don't get music. You get some salad.
Yeah. So in the end, all the people were able to adapt to use the click track, and they enjoyed it.
In the end, we reached with that orchestra a very high level of playing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, we played a lot of stuff which people don't know from James Last. We played Pink, we played U2 songs, we even played When September Ends from this, how do they call it, a kind of grunge band from England. So it was a big, big repertoire. And I think it we all had a big profit by getting aware that an excuse is less than trying to adapt. I mean, a click track is not something I find very admirable, honest to be. But imagine 40 people coming together, two rehearsals, and then the tour starts. How you want to manage that?
Yeah.
You have to collect things that give you a constant.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Because
yeah.
otherwise, everything is a variable. And if you have 40 variables, you will not get a result.
Yeah. What about guitar? I mean, on the stand video, you are playing, I think, a Guthrie Govan Charvel model, right? That's your main guitar?
Well, in the last 2 years, I play mostly on that guitar. It's a fantastic guitar. But I have, sometimes I go back to the old Strats. I have three old Strats. I have a 54.
Nice.
With the maple neck, which I played live on also an Aguilera with James Last. There's some videos in the net. I played this song Save Me From Myself on that guitar. And the both Aguilera solos I did on my 63 Strat, the blue one, that's the most singing. That's with that Strat, I also played Triple O, the first Kemper video from 7 years ago. And I have the one I told you about, the 69 one, the Hendrix Strat from that guy. Not the same, because I was stupid and sold it when I came to Germany. cannot forget this. But and then I have also other guitars. I have a Burns guitar, which has the pickups of Brian May. I don't know if you know that guitar. Split sound, they are called. I have that one, and I have the Chet Atkins Gretsch, which I played the on my fourth album. I played Riders on the Storm on that.
Oh, from the Doors,
and that
yes.
Is the, that is the song that is actually the most well-known I ever played, because with that album, I was in the charts in US.
Cool,
in the Billboard charts.
Excellent.
For a short time, that was, but it has nothing to do with my playing today. It's a clean Wes Montgomery sound with a bit of jazzy, chilly, loopy background. So I just mentioned I have a lot of colors, because when I, you know, I don't go for profiles. If I need that Gretsch sound, I know exactly no guitar will give me that sound, because it's a semi-resonance, you know, with this in the back, it has this leather piece.
The round piece,
And all my rhythm guitars, for instance, I do with a Telecaster Sinline with a maple neck, which I also have. And on that guitar, I would never play a solo. Because it's not made for a solo like I play. But just to come back to the Guthrie Govan, the Guthrie Govan worked a lot. That's I heard from him on the tremolo. You know, and it's the only guitar I have that I don't have to retune after every part I play. My old Strats, you know, if I play quite wildly on the guitar, and they detune. That's it. And then you spend more time tuning the guitar than concentrating on what you want to express. And on that guitar, I must say, I played some the worst experience you can have. I think I would have died on stage, because I hate detuned guitars. If I had a concert in Romania on a festival, and it got later and later, and it was open air in the mountains, you know, and you get at 8 o'clock, you have still something like 19 degrees, and at midnight, you have 0 degrees,
okay.
plus five or so, because it's in the mountains.
Yeah, yeah.
I went on stage, I was the last to play,
okay,
and I thought it's going to be a disaster. I had only the Guthrie goblin,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I was amazed. It was not as in tune as I would like it to be, but for, I think, even the musicians, it was perfect.
Okay, good. So it's a very stable guitar.
It's a very stable guitar also for live playing, you know.
Mm.
And the only thing I don't like about it is that the neck is a little bit too straight, I think.
Okay.
I would like a little more shaping, but he designed it for himself, not for me. So
so you mean the fretboard is too flat for you? You would like to have a radius?
A little bit. Okay. I talk about really, really small, tiny bits, yes. But it has 24 frets, and I need that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my whole songs, they go up there, and it's a universal, it's the best instrument I've ever played, I must say.
Okay, excellent.
It's so well done. I mean, technically, absolutely brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
And tuning-wise, and it's a fantastic guitar. And it sounds, this old Strats, I worked so year for year, I changed the pickups. Because they hum. I mean, you cannot play what I played, my sound with an old Strat on stage. You go. you. It's more hum than note.
Yeah.
You know, with lights and all that. So I put there some on the blue one. I have Seymour Duncan duck buckers, which are double stacked, but not this way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're over.
Yeah. Stacked humbuckers,
kind of humbuckers,
single coil format, yes.
It's a bit, the sound is okay, it's a bit more nosy, more like this. You have to EQ a little bit to get that nose out, and I think this one, I mean, this humbucker, I don't even know if it's built by Chavelle, the one I only play neck. Neck humbucker.
Okay. Okay.
It sounds absolutely fantastic with the Kemper, with that sound. I've that profile I mentioned, Tube Thomson amp. It's what I like to hear. You know, and I don't. If you find something like that, you don't change it.
For sure. As a word of conclusion, can you tell us what are your next projects and where people can find you, check your music out on the internet?
Well, I think if they want to listen to my own music, they should go to my website, and there's a list with all the albums. They can listen to every song into the... My whole career, I have 8 albums on the market, which are completely different one to the other.
Okay.
It starts 1980 till last one is 2017. So it's a lot to listen to. And on YouTube, they find, I think, over 50 videos.
Okay.
So I'm not a secret.
Okay.
What is important is I have some people they love, for instance, Talking Guitar, which is it's an older album, I think my third one, because I play almost the whole time fretless guitar.
Nice. Interesting.
which not a lot of people do.
Yeah.
That's a very special sound, you know, Fred, and it's always clean.
Mm-hmm.
You have to use it with a lot of compression because the fretless guitar is
yeah,
even
there is
shorter
no sustain,
than,
yeah.
Then and they love this album. It's totally different than what we talked today, mainly the my new technique with things like I play Aguilera on the stand. Or Etude de la Libertad is also the video before the stand. It's also very, that one is I think, also very tricky to play. It's a sequence which I also practice every day. And yeah, that is the two advices I can give. I will not play live in the next time because that situation,
yeah.
I think, is not going to change very soon. I think it's a rather a plan to bring people on their knees rather than it's a disease. I don't believe in that idea even. And I think that, yeah, that concerts will be very hard, and I don't like virtual stuff. I hate to play to the internet. You know, if I give a concert, I can do videos for gear. I can do even a video like for an Aguilera song. That is something I do for that video. But a concert virtually, I think, is the most stupid that you can choose because you don't see any audience. You play for walls, and I don't like that.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay. Erlen, thank you very much for your time. It was great to be able to have you on the show. Hopefully, next time we'll meet when I am able again to travel to Berlin, or if you ever come to Paris, maybe we could do a guitar in hand interview here in my showroom in Paris. So thank you very much for your time, Erlen.
Great idea. Thank you a lot for your time and for your great questions. And
thank you.
I hope people will enjoy that. And I'm sure we'll see another time. Because,
all right.
I'm not going to stop. I just say it's a pity that that we're in this trap at the moment and we have to fix it. And then
indeed.
Life will go on.
Yes, indeed.
Wish all
right.
All the best anyway.
All right. Thank you very much for your time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Pour le prix d'un magazine, abonnez-vous à la chaîne Guitare pour accéder aux vidéos intégrales. For the price of a magazine, subscribe to The Guitar Channel to access the full videos.